Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
October 10th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, water photography. Well, welcome back to another show. I'm glad you tuned in this week. I have some interesting stuff to cover. I'm going to talk about water photography. Now, the reason why I'm saying water photography instead of underwater photography is because with water photography, what I mean is using your camera in situations where there's water. So that could be diving, you know, something as serious as scuba diving. It could be snorkeling, where you're just kind of cruising around the surface and doing a little bit of free diving, you know, 10 feet or less. It could be playing around in a swimming pool and other situations like that. Or it could be even in times when you're on a boat or something and there's water spraying around and you want to use your camera, but you want to protect it while you're taking pictures. It could be something even as simple as taking pictures in the rain or in the snow and sleet. So anything that involves water and your camera, this is kind of what the show is about. Now, the reason why I want to talk about this, if you've been following the digitalstory.com, my blog online, you know that I've been around water a lot lately. I just spent a week in Maui, and I was snorkeling and having all sorts of fun with that. And I've been able to, you know, refine a lot of my underwater techniques, or even, you know, shooting around water. And I wanted to share some of that stuff while it was still fresh in my mind. And I also want to talk about it because housings for our cameras have really changed a lot. You know, just like everything else in photography these days, you know, the tools that we have to work with are a lot different than they were 3 or 4 years ago. And if you haven't visited this type of shooting for a while, you might be in for some, you know, really pleasant surprises. So we're going to jump right in. We're going to get our feet wet and talk a little bit about splashing around with our cameras and having some fun. Now, before I get to that, I do want to cover a little virtual camera club business right off the top of the bat. You know, our photo assignment for this month, for October, is reflections, which I think just kind of works nicely with the whole water topic. Not that you need to have a water subject for this photo assignment, but it is one of the options that you have. And I'm already getting assignments, submissions in for this assignment, which is great. I think we really have a lot of momentum around photo assignment right now. And so I wanted to, you know, just put it at the top of the show just to make sure that if you haven't had a chance to listen all the way to the end of the show where I've been talking about photo assignment lately, I thought, well, we'll put it at the top this week. And that way I can remind you to be working on your assignment, Reflections, for October. And of course, if you have any questions about submitting your shots, just go to the submissions page on the Digital Story and there'll be everything there that you need to know. And I also want to remind you that you can submit photos up to 600 pixels wide, because I think, you know, the photo assignment has become popular enough now that I'm going to continue to use the album approach instead of running them in line right on the Digital Story. And that gives me a little bit more operating room. And so 600 pixels is great. You can send in 400 wide, 500 wide, 600 wide, whatever works for you, but do keep it at that 600 pixel limit. Now, since I did just get back from the road, I'm working on the album for September, and I should have that up either as you listen to the show or right around there. So look for that on the Digital Story. That should be posted this week if it's not up already. So I'll do the best I can with that. We have a lot of really good submissions, and I just want to make sure that everything looks really great before I put it online. And of course, as I always do, I want to remind you about grab shots and to keep those flowing in. They're terrific. They've been looking good. I've run some really nice ones lately. And if you're sitting on a grab shot, you know, sometimes what I know happens with people is that they'll be working on a photo assignment and a grab shot will actually come out of the photo assignment. So they'll end up with both a submission for the photo assignment and for the grab shot, and off you go. There's all sorts of really good exposure. And the other thing too, remember, if you have a website, if you have a photo website, be sure to send that along with your grab shot or your photo assignment, and I will put a link, you know, I'll make your name, the link to your photo page, and that way you can share the rest of your shots with anyone who comes to our site, not just our Virtual Camera Club members. Okay, so let's get to water photography. Now, you know, this is a lot of fun. There's a lot of great shots that are available to us around water. As I mentioned, I spent last week snorkeling, and I have to tell you that underwater photography has changed so much since I did it the first time about 15 years ago. In the old days, as I say, I had a Nikonis underwater camera. It was a 35mm film camera, and you know, it took good shots, but it was not the easiest thing in the world to use. Metering was very difficult. In fact, I even had a separate handheld meter, which when you're underwater, you just don't want things like this. A lot of times I had to use a strobe, which was not good for me or the fish, really. And and the housing, you know, everything about it was just clunky. So it was so much work that I actually just set it aside for a while and said, well, maybe things will get easier in the future. And you know what? The future's here now. So for this trip, and then I have a trip also later on this month, I'll be going to Belize as part of the Geek Cruise, which I'm teaching a digital photography course on the cruise itself. I thought, well, let's try the new underwater housings. So, as I mentioned on the site, I'm using a Canon SD700IS. It's one of their little compact digital ELFs, and they have underwater housing. Canon makes a housing for this camera, and the whole housing with the camera in it and everything is really about the size of a small digital SLR, the whole thing. Now, if you're curious as to what these things look like, you can go over to the Canon USA site, and that's actually www.usa.canon.com, and take a look at their cameras. And when you're on the camera page, you'll notice they'll have a badge over on the side for underwater photography. And so you click on that, and it takes you over. They actually have a dedicated page for underwater photography. Now, of course, Canon isn't the only one that makes housings for their cameras. Olympus does, and other manufacturers do also. So this isn't just a Canon thing. However, Canon is what I used on this shoot, so it's what I'm most familiar with. So as you scroll down this page, you will see that they have all these underwater housings for their various cameras, the PowerShot S80, the S1IS, the SD700, which I used, the A-series of cameras, on and on and on, all the way down through the page. Now, most of these housings cost anywhere between $125 and $165. And so they're not cheap. I mean, you know, $165 is $165, no matter how you slice it. But in terms of what you're able to do with them, and in terms that you're able to use a camera that you're already using when you're not underwater, you know, for the, you know, other 50 weeks of the year or the other 40 weeks of the year, it's kind of a cool add-on. And the other thing about them, the underwater housing really should be called an all-weather housing, because you can shoot with these things topside. And this is one of the things that I wanted to test on this last trip. Not only shooting underwater with the camera, but also leaving it in the housing, and when I was topside, taking shots with that, and see how they compared to if I weren't using the housing at all. And I can tell you right up front that the shots that I took topside with the camera still in the housing were terrific. They were great. So there's no real trade-off. You're shooting through one piece of glass that is photo optical glass. It's just like having a clear filter, basically, on your lens. And you're in business. So, and the controls are so easy to use that it's not even really a drawback. It's not, you know, clunky and clumsy and things like that. So, you know, suddenly I'm going, wow, there are some real possibilities here. So first I'll talk about the housing itself, and then I'll talk about some of the ways that you can use it. First of all, the housing. It's very cool. It's a plastic case that opens up in half. It has a hinge. And so where the case meets when you close it, there is a rubber gasket. And what you do is with this gasket, every time before you go diving or however you're going to use it, you just take it off. It's very easy to take off. And you put a little bit of a silica gel on it, very little, and then you place it back. You put your camera inside the housing, and then you close it up. And now it is watertight. The housing that I was using for the SD700 is good to 130 feet. Now, I never got down that far because I was only free diving. I wasn't snorkeling. But I did get down to, 15, 18 feet free diving, and it worked great. I never had any problems at all. Now, of course, the first thing you do when you get the housing is test it before you put your camera in there. And so, you lube it up the gasket, and then I just put a little piece of tissue in there, and then submerge it underwater. I put it under 5 feet for a few minutes, and then, you dry it off, and then you open it up and make sure that everything is nice and dry the way that you want it to be. Most of the time, almost every time, hopefully, there isn't a problem. And if there is a problem, then obviously you take it back because, it's not good. You have a bad underwater housing, which is something you really don't want. So then I put the camera in it, and the next test that I did was actually in a swimming pool before I left for the location shoot. And swimming pools are great places not only to test underwater housings, but to get some really fun shots. Now, you would think that using these things, you would have limitations on the controls. But believe it or not, you can access every control on your camera while it's in the housing. And, you look at the back and, you have, these buttons on the back of the housing that when you push them, they activate, the various buttons on your camera. Now, the one thing that I will say, it really pays to be familiar with your camera and, what each of the buttons do. Because when you put it in the housing, you're not able to, read the various labels for the buttons. Sometimes not at all. Or if you can, not very well, and certainly not underwater. So you want to know what each of your buttons do. So, there's the power button, the shutter button, the zooming button. But then there are things like being able to change modes. And one of the things that I like about the Canon compacts is that in their scene modes, they actually have an underwater mode. This is really cool because it helps compensate for the different coloring underwater, which is obviously different than topside. It's more blue. So while you're underwater, you can use the controls on the housing to change it to underwater mode, and then you just click away. If it needs the flash, it will turn the flash on. If it doesn't need the flash, it won't use it. I hardly ever had the flash on because I was in clear water and I wasn't going down much below 10 feet. So I was able to shoot existing light, which is really, really the way to go, I think, if you can. And then if I were to pop up topside and let's say I wanted to take some shots of people getting ready to go diving, then I could just switch the scene mode over to regular shooting, take some shots. Again, the camera's still in the housing. And then when I go back under, switch it back to underwater mode. You can control all of these things easily with the controls on the housing. Again, the only trick is you kind of want to know, you know, what buttons are what. Now, the cool thing about the Canons is that on screen, they tell you what's going on. So if I were to switch from program mode, regular program mode, to underwater mode, it would tell me that I've made that switch on the screen so I could see what was going on. So as long as you know basically where the controls are, you can confirm that you've set the right control by looking at the LCD monitor on the camera. Very nice, very convenient. Now, one thing about these compact cameras is that none of them have RAW mode anymore. And, you know, we've talked about this on the site quite a bit. So you are shooting in JPEG mode. So I want to remind you, make sure that you shoot at the highest quality setting and at the highest resolution so that you're capturing as much information as possible. Now, once I got the shots and I loaded them onto my computer, and I was using iPhoto for this particular trip because it was more of a vacation trip, and I really just wanted to stay in sort of fun vacation mode, so I was using iPhoto. One thing that I learned in iPhoto about when you're shooting underwater is that the Enhance button on iPhoto, which I don't use a whole lot for topside prints because I think it's a little heavy-handed, but for underwater photography, you hit the Enhance button, and boy, a lot of times it cleans it up really, really well. So what I would do when I was image editing these shots is if it needed a little work, I'd start with the Enhance button, and then I'd use the Adjust panel in iPhoto and usually back it off the contrast a little bit, maybe back off the saturation a little bit, and sometimes I would increase the exposure a little bit, and voila. I ended up with some very nice shots, and in fact, if you want, you can go onto the Digital Story, and you can see some of the shots that I did from that week. I have a sea turtle and a moray eel. I have all sorts of good stuff. All of it was captured with this little compact camera in JPEG mode using iPhoto to adjust the images. I didn't go into Photoshop for any of these at all. All the shots were either published as is or using the enhanced mode with some minor adjusting. So there's a nice sort of equipment workflow for you. It's very easy to do. You know, you're able to stay in vacation mode. I would usually play with the shots in the hotel at night and be ready to go the next day. Okay, so now that we know our equipment and a little bit about how to manage the images with the software, what sort of situations are the housings good for? Well, of course, there's snorkeling and diving, and that's pretty much a no-brainer. And I tell you, one of the things that I found handy is that the new compacts have a larger LCD on the back. And this makes it a lot easier for framing the shots in the housing because, of course, you're still underwater. You're looking through a mask. You have water. You have reflections. And if you have one of the smaller LCDs, I think it's harder to frame the shots. Now, even with a larger LCD, sometimes it can still be a challenge if the reflection is the wrong way. So you end up guessing a little bit every now and then, just sort of pointing the camera at the subject and hope that you have it framed well. So I'd say about 3/4 of the time I could use the LCD, and about the other 25% I had to do some guessing, and a lot of times the guessing turned out well. But it's not just underwater also. For instance, I mentioned you know, testing your shots in a swimming pool. Well, swimming pool shots are a lot of fun. I mean, just in general, and especially if you have kids. You know, we end up sort of taking the same kind of kid shots over and over again. And if you want a whole new kind of kid shot, I tell you, get one of these housings, take your kids to the pool, get in there and splash around with them, have them, you know, play around underwater, have them, you know, play around on top of the water. Just get in there and play. The shots, they're a riot. I mean, I tell you, first of all, most kids really like playing in the water anyway. So they're already animated. They're already having a good time. There's a lot of smiles. And then, you know, you have this new photographic environment that you're capturing them in. And it's a lot of fun. So I would say swimming pools are definitely very high on the list for having some type of all-weather camera. And, you know, because these things shoot so well topside, I think that they're worth having just for going to the beach in general, even if you don't plan on snorkeling or doing any kind of diving. If you have the camera in one of these underwater housings, then basically all you have to do is, you know, you don't want it sitting out in the sun, in the hot sun, because, you know, the clear plastic will magnify, you know, the sun's rays. So I always use a white t-shirt or something to keep it covered up on the blanket. But other than that, you can have it right there. And so as the kids are playing in the sand, as they're splashing around in the surf, you can go splash around in the surf. You can basically shoot in any sort of condition at the beach. So they're very nice, even if you don't plan on diving, but you're around water, you're around salt air, you're around sand, you're around all these things that our cameras don't like. Because these housings shoot so well topside, they're really a great thing to have if you spend a lot of time at the shore. I'll tell you another time that they're a lot of fun, and I haven't had a chance to do this for a long time, but boy, I tell you, now that I have the housing, I'm considering it, is a river rafting and canoeing and kayaking. Another great water activity where you have lots of shots available to you, not only, you know, while you're actually in the act of canoeing, but you get to see a lot of things from the water. You get a different perspective on the land. So there's some nice landscapes, and you have a lot of really good photo opportunities. And again, you don't have to worry about your camera. The only thing you have to worry about, of course, is just, you know, losing it altogether, but you don't have to worry about water damage. So any of those water sports that involve boating, again, the waterproof case is nice. It protects your camera from the salt air and the spray and incidental splashing. And, you know, if you do fall into the water and your camera goes with you, not a problem, because, you know, it's basically watertight to 130 feet, and ain't nobody going to fall into the water 130 feet. Now, another condition that I think these things are really useful is for shooting in the rain and the snow. You know, I like shooting in the rain. I think that, you know, you get some really wonderful color saturation, and those types of shots just look different. And a lot of times I'll use a Ziploc bag, and it's sort of clunky, but it does work to keep the camera dry. However, if you have one of these housings, here's a tip for you. Put your camera in the housing, go out and shoot in the rain, and then over the lens barrel part of the housing, you know, it has a nose, right, that the lens can extend into. I use just a little toilet paper tube that extends just a little beyond the nose of the housing. And I usually just duct tape it or gaffers tape it in place. What that does is that helps keep the raindrops off the front of the camera, you know, in the housing, so that you don't get raindrops on the, you know, where the lens is shooting, which causes, you know, distortion and some weird effects that you probably don't want. So I just sort of create a homemade lens hood for the housing using a toilet paper tube or a paper towel tube, and then you can go out shooting in the rain with this thing, and you don't have to worry about drops falling on the front glass element, and you can just shoot away and not worry at all about you know, damaging your camera. So it's coming into winter, I would say this is a really great tool to have for getting out there and really shooting in the snow and rain and sleet elements. Again, allowing you to capture a whole different kind of shot that you normally wouldn't shoot, you know, especially if you're more kind of the fair weather photographer type. Now, if you're shooting in these cooler conditions, the rain and snow, you might want to keep in mind the same problem that you have with just your regular camera, which is condensation. In that, you know, it's okay for condensation to form on the outside of the housing. It's not going to hurt it at all, as opposed to your camera. When you bring it in from very cold conditions into a warm house, you know, you don't want condensation forming on the camera. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I recommend with cameras is, of course, that you put them in a Ziploc bag while you're still out in the cool conditions. And then when you bring it in the house, let it stay in the Ziploc bag until it warms up. You don't have to worry about that so much with the housing. It's okay if condensation forms on the housing, but I wouldn't take the camera out of the housing until everything has warmed up, okay? Because your camera is still going to be cold even though it's in that housing. So if you're out shooting in rain and snow and so forth, go ahead, bring your camera and housing in the house, let it warm up for a little while, get to room temperature, let the condensation form on the housing, and then take your camera out, and that way you don't have to worry about condensation forming on the camera itself, possibly seeping down in through some of the cracks and causing you some problems. Now, some people have asked me about certain cameras. Pentax makes a few so-called all-weather cameras, and they are splash-resistant, which means you can take them out into the rain and the snow and even splash around in a pool or something with them. They're not really underwater cameras per se, and you wouldn't want to keep them submerged for very long. And so, you know, they are a nice alternative. However, I have to tell you that I feel more comfortable having a camera in some sort of protective housing than, you know, taking a chance of pushing the limits of a of an all-weather camera. Now, I have talked to a few people who have all-weather cameras, and they like them. They've had pretty good results with them. But I've also, you know, kind of pushed them and, well, how much have you, you know, actually used this in bad weather? And most of the time I hear, well, not very much, because it still makes me a little nervous kind of thing. And I think you just have more confidence about taking your equipment out in these really crazy conditions if you have something nice and secure to put it in. The last thing that I want to mention is a little bit about etiquette. And if you are snorkeling and if you're out in nature, make sure that, first of all, you're aware of people around you, and so that you're being a good citizen that way. But don't touch the marine life. I really advise against it. Keep your hands off coral and the reefs. First of all, you can cut yourself easily. I don't recommend feeding fish in order to get good shots. In part, what happens is that by feeding the fish with fish food, which you can get at the local dive shops and so forth, it's great. You will get a lot of fish swimming around you. But what happens is it makes them more aggressive. And that's not necessarily something you want. A lot of the fish in Hawaii and Mexico and other places like that, they have pretty sharp teeth or a pretty sharp ridges in their mouth because, you know, they're eating off coral and so forth. And if they get aggressive, they can take a nip at you, and they can bite very hard. And even though they're not trying to hurt you, they get caught up in the frenzy, and sometimes you can get a very, very nasty cut, ones that are hard to stop bleeding and so forth. So I don't recommend feeding fish, and I definitely don't recommend touching turtles and other wildlife that you find underwater. You know, take pictures, get your shots, and then just be happy with that, and let everything be the way it was before you got there. So if you're looking for, you know, a way to kind of spice up your photography life, take a look at these housings. Take a look at the cameras that go in them. You know, look at alternatives. You might be able to find a housing for a camera you already have. If you're thinking about getting a new camera, a new compact camera, consider getting one that at least is housing compatible. So if up the road you do want to get a housing, you can. And go out and splash around a little bit. I think it's a really invigorating way to jazz up your shots. And I've had a lot of fun with it. I'm going to be shooting some more. and we can pick up this conversation online. So whether you're shooting topside or below the water, go out there, take some shots, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.